It's a pleasure to be here and to have the opportunity to share some of what we've done at the Graduate School of Education of Columbia University, which is Teachers College. Basically, in 1994, I had the experience of being the first African-American woman to move through the ranks and gain tenure in their 100-year history. And shortly thereafter, I traveled to Ghana. Thank you. Of course, there were stars who came in with tenure, like Linda Darling Hammond, but I moved to the ranks and did so. And in traveling to Ghana in 1999 and having ongoing relationships with colleagues, I realized that I was living without community. So if anyone has been to Africa, you or other countries as well, you understand that being a part of a community is a very fundamental part of one's being. So I decided that I needed to create community. And so I created the research group on disparities in health. And the results were very beneficial to my many graduate students, pre-doctoral fellows, postdoctoral fellows. If you can consider from 1990 to 2002, I had approximately 24 graduate students, two of whom were African American, about three were international. But once I used what I call African technology, which was a group-based learning approach, a communal learning approach. From 2003 to 2010, I had 64 doctoral students who graduated, 21 international from various countries, including Africa, the Caribbean, as well as 24 African-American women who graduated with their doctorates, as well as men and other diversity in terms of Hispanic, white students, blah, blah, blah. But what you're going to see today really are the results of that research group on disparities in health and what we've been able to accomplish. And a lot of it involves some of my pioneering research with a doctoral student named Rupa Misra, who came to me from another department, actually, because he was looking for a community. So he came to my department from computers and technology. And part of what we did was we designed a tool, a research tool to evaluate healthcare websites. Okay, so you'll kind of experience the objectives as we go along. But the idea is that in that very same year, working with Rupa Misra, I had another doctoral student, Donna Bacon, and Donna Bacon ended up developing breast cancer. And she and I had actually taken the year before a website design class. So Ruth and I finished her website. Then she came back after her breast cancer surgery and treatments and was able to complete her dissertation. But basically, what she did was create a website called www.divahealth.org, which you'll see shortly. So it's going to appear several times. But we can look at the work that we've done with this website in terms of the challenges across the lifespan, not only for African-American women, but for other diverse women. And so you kind of already saw some of the statistics that apply given the prior two presentations. We talk about the gaps in health in terms of health disparities. So you're not surprised to see that we've had websites and research studies that have been hosted on the www.divahealth.org website that have addressed HIV/AIDS. As a matter of fact, it was Donna Bacon's initial intention that she had a website, because she teaches at a college on Long Island that's probably not doing too well right now. But part of what she experienced was the extent to which all of her African-American students in particular would come to her after class, to her office hours, wanting to know all this information about sexually transmitted diseases, HIV, because she was a very popular and engaging professor. So it relieved her workload burden to put it all on a website. And so she created 16 videos and a number of links that basically explain every kind of HIV, every kind of sexually transmitted infection, including HIV, as well as explaining all of the modes of contraception, pregnancy prevention. So that was her motivation. So since then, we've had a number of dissertations by fellows of the research group that have addressed HIV/AIDS, STIs, obesity, diabetes, breast cancer, sexual assault in the military and female veterans result in trauma. And also, we've been very innovative in developing a protocol for how you can respond to epidemics, such as the seasonal flu or a particular strand of flu. and how we also have therefore created entire portals on this website that have been devoted to providing information, conducting research, and most recently, we're now getting into the use of avatar videos, for example, pregnancy prevention. So let's begin. So the concept is that, as a matter of fact, Rupa Misra and myself have a very exciting publication in a book that just came out this year on telemedicine. And we offer a chapter that really talks about the importance of websites being engaging, having certain features to deliver e-health or e-health or health education. And so these websites become a wonderful way to provide primary, secondary, tertiary prevention strategies. And the philosophy of the research group. I did a postdoc in New York. I won't say where I did it, although you won't be hard to find out if you Google. But I did a postdoc. Part of what involves, part of what you witness in the culture of research and grant-funded research, my postdoc was actually on narcotic drug research, and my main observation was that all the principal investigators were compulsively addicted to soft grant money and were compulsively seeking it. But aside from that, you know, the concept of just, you know, amassing data, sometimes 4 hours of data, and they used very little of it. And so the idea was that not only did we want to provide open access, we wanted to provide something that would involve ongoing open access. You'll see shortly in the next slide, the whole concept of giving, that we want to give, we just don't want to take and take and take from subjects, but we want to give them something as well. So the idea of having a website that provides open access to health education as well as prevention intervention strategies is a very important part of the philosophy that we have in the research group. So this is it in 2006, divahealth.org. And as you may know, many African-American women call themselves divas. If you know anything about some of the most popular singers, you know that we call them divas. So the idea is to attract young African-American women and other young women of African descent to really create a website that was for them. And so we conduct all of our e-health research, mostly using SurveyMonkey to create our surveys. But the idea is that we feel as though it's better to give than to receive. But on top of that, it is better to give and receive, meaning when you're conducting research, give something, but also you're receiving the data. And our goal has been to integrate data collection via our online surveys with the provision of access to online interventions that facilitate disease prevention and achievement of wellness. So here we have among the very first studies, Bacon, who was able to really pioneer what we have done since then for the past 7 years. And we have the concept of diffusing this innovation of gaining access to health information on a website using social marketing campaigns. So the idea is that back in 2006, 2007, we would launch the website and also a social marketing campaign that would simply tell people, go to. And also, we offer incentives. For example, you take the survey, and you have, for example, like a 3 in 200 chance of winning. Now we're up to a $300, $200, or $100 gift certificate for use on Amazon.com to offer an incentive for women to participate. And so, whereas we use text messaging, emailing, now we're using postings on Facebook website pages as well as Twitter. And, of course, some are using LinkedIn. And let's see what we have accomplished. Part of what we've accomplished is that we've actually tapped into a demographic that we often do not see represented in the literature. To what extent, for example, do we see research samples where, you know, you've got people with doctorate degrees, you've got, you know, 26% with master's degrees. And so many individuals find our research to be very, very refreshing to get a picture. And the idea is that this is still a group of African-American women or diverse women who are still very much at risk. And so part of what happened in that first survey of African-American women, using, again, the survey that I created with Rupa Misra for evaluating healthcare websites, and this scale has several components. It's got a stage of change for accessing the internet and computers. It's got self-efficacy for being able to do so using internet and computers. It's got website attitudes and beliefs subscale, and then it's got a scale that allows them to rate healthcare websites for features. And so this particular website was rated very highly. And then, again, part of what we've done is we end up having now a portal rich in information that can be used for many other studies where we haven't, in some cases, had to add more. In other words, look, this is a wonderful resource full of information, 16 videos in English. But when we did, in 2008, for example, I had a group of four female Haitian students, and so it became a wonderful opportunity. All of them were doing something different, but they all wanted to look at members of the Haitian community, very concerned about the HIV/AIDS epidemic, actually in Haiti, as well as among members of Haitian communities around the world. As you may recall, that's a group that has faced a great deal of stigmatization in regard to the HIV epidemic. And so we basically hired a videographer. I put up a piece of African fabric in the conference room. We created dialogues for skits. They actually participated in a focus group that I conducted. So we really identified in Haitian culture what were some of the most common, really high-risk situations for HIV transmission, such as schoolgirls needing money for school, who are vulnerable to sugar daddies, older men, many other kinds of scenarios, the extreme depression and suicidality among many who are testing HIV positive in the community. So we created six videos that are in Creole that are on that website. Now, what's very interesting is that this particular website, one day, one of my doctoral students, who's now a newly minted professor at Howard University, she got a phone call. Someone said, "Hey, have you heard about the Haitians?" This is someone from Canada. "Have you heard about the Haitian station?" And she says, "Yeah, I'm in that. I created it. I helped to create it." So it truly was a well-diffused innovation, and it hosted three research studies. One of them was by Cassius, and so part of what she found was that there are high rates of depression, partially predicted by high levels of stigmatization and family stress. And again, these are all online studies. So she had a sister in Haiti. They had computers. People in Haiti actually went from this clinic and confidentially, anonymously went online and completed this survey, clearly with great success, to get a sample size of 176 if you consider the conditions. And then Castor also did a dissertation. And here we actually created a protocol. This was really kind of groundbreaking in 2008, where we were really creating a protocol that would totally maintain confidentiality for conducting focus groups and interviews online. And we were very successful in identifying evidence of knowledge deficits, inaccurate information, cultural stereotypes, silence around AIDS, and a need for better dissemination of HIV/AIDS information in Haiti, given that we were asking individuals who were familiar, had been to Haiti within the past 3 years, what were some of the factors they felt that were placing young Haitian women in Haiti at risk. So we had nurses and we had other young women who participated. Our third Haitian station study was actually an evaluation of the website. And here we found that high ratings of website portal, they were predicted by higher self-efficacy for using the computer and internet to obtain information and lower self-efficacy for negotiating condom use. And then we've conducted other research. For example, Samuels is someone who was interested in, hey, can we basically, you know, imagine beauty shops that actually have internet access and have a screen, and women could be encouraged to go online and gain access to this information. So she did a survey of feasibility, found that it was quite feasible. And it turned out that those women who knew the least about STDs went to the beauty shop more often and had lower income. And so we saw that as a venue for prevention education. And then Bachman, who is a nurse with a specialty in diabetes care and has a wonderful curriculum for training peer educators for diabetes self-management, created 13 training videos. And so we basically had health educators and other specialists evaluate these videos for the extent to which videos of someone shopping, videos of someone cooking, you know, explaining how you make food choices as a diabetic, found that it was a viable kind of diffusion of an innovation of getting training online. And then Bratz took advantage of the fact that there was this impending flu epidemic, and really, and that the CDC had released new guidelines for both H1N1 and seasonal flu, and so again was able to use the protocol that we've created for confidential, anonymous online focus groups and interviews to get a sense of what African American mothers intended to do. Were they having access to the vaccines? What were some of the issues going on with medical doctors? And so part of what she found was that, yes, this is a great model for showcasing how to conduct research in the digital age when any new epidemic or pandemic can benefit midstream or in process from information on the perceptions of point persons, such as mothers, and whether or not they're actually going to have their children vaccinated. So not surprisingly, we just go to the last line to save time, among the things that they found were that there was a perception that vaccinations were readily available, and some of them had reasons to vaccinate, and some had reasons not to, such as a lack of trust in the vaccine, a lack of trust in physicians' advice. Then we've also created the Breast Cancer Awareness and Prevention Portal. This is the research of Sultan Khan, and part of what Leah did in this case was created a whole new portal devoted to breast cancer awareness prevention, with photographs, with information. And again, what's refreshing is that, you know, we have samples with, you know, how often do you see a sample with an income of $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 for a sample of mostly African American women? So again, many people find that we're making a really nice contribution. But the idea is that the website was rated positively. Women expressed a high level of confidence and stage of change in assessing the computer and in accessing. Oh, two C's, very important. In accessing the computer for healthcare information. The best predictor of a high rating of the website was income. Higher website ratings were significantly associated with lower income. So there's something about our website where even though we're attracting African American women and they may have a mean income of 50 or 60, 70,000, the women who like it the most are the low income women. And this has come across in about three of our studies. And then Sargent also did a breast cancer screening behavior study. And again, look at that mean income of 61,000. And her regression found that being in a more advanced stage of change for engaging in breast cancer screening, meaning an action or a maintenance stage, this was the best predictors of that involved women being older and having higher self-efficacy for performing breast cancer, breast self-examination. And again, as you see, for each of these studies, once Sultan Khan created the breast cancer portal, now we can have another study where we both, it is better to give and receive, meaning now we can do a study where we're doing a survey, but now in exchange for the survey, you can access all of this information, this new breast cancer portal. So again, that reflects the value in our research. This was also done with a new Eat Healthy, Be Active portal, where Tete was able to create a new portal and find that those who rated the Eat Healthy, Be Active portal more favorably were less educated, again, they like it, with less educated, heavier based on self-perception, and scored higher on a measure where they rated web features as important. And so, again, in a study involving veterans, imagine that attracting women who have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan. These were diverse women. 59% met criteria for PTSD. Now, this is very interesting when women aren't supposed to be in combat. In addition, we found that there was rape and military sexual assault were the most common traumas. And if you look at the very low, the next to the last line, 23% had been forced to have sex in this particular sample. And then we have ongoing HIV/AIDS studies. We had actually three studies that African-American women did in the research group and graduated just this last May. So I'm just highlighting one. But you may remember last March, there was there's these hot spots where there's a very high rate. Perhaps you remember hearing that last March. It was kind of hot in the news about these hot spots where there were very high levels of prevalence of HIV among African-American women. Well, most refreshing was that how we found evidence of pockets of smart and empowered women who were coping adaptively with the reality of a gender imbalance, meaning more women than men available because of the incarceration crisis, and also in the era of HIV/AIDS, that they were really negotiating condom use and using condoms in a way that was refreshing. And now our most recent research involves the use of avatars, so that we really want to, you know, provide avatars that provide health education. So Alicia Chung, part of what she's doing is an online evaluation of her new website portal, which is going to feature videos. There's going to be Michelle Obama as an avatar introducing the My Plate that should have, you know, half fruits and vegetables. And then there's going to be a teacher, and as well as a mother and a child. And there are going to be a series of 9 videos altogether that are going to be, you know, basically providing some health education. So the idea, will these cartoon-like videos and engage individuals so that they basically anticipate making changes in their activity levels, in their choices for their plates, and their choices when they are outside of the home, whether the cafeteria or parties, etc. And we're also creating avatar videos providing education on all the methods of contraception, and hopefully encouraging women across the lifespan to engage in unintended pregnancies so that we can prevent infant mortality, maternal, in other words, negative infant and mother outcomes, so that every pregnancy is one that is truly intended for women across the ages of 18 to 45. Again, because we're doing online research and there's nothing like an exempt IRB review because everything is online and anonymous and confidential, our research is biased toward those who are age 18 and above. So part of what I'd also like to do is to disclose one relationship, and that is with the annual Health Disparities Conference at Teachers College, which this year is going to create an opportunity to publish an edited volume. And we're also going to webcast, and it's the first year that we are absolutely not charging anything, no registration fee. Yay! And it's going to be an opportunity, really encouraging both graduate students, early career professionals, and others who may are advanced career professionals who may present at our larger plenary sessions to come and participate. You'll have an opportunity to meet many of our fellows in the research group. We're really going to feature, part of what I'm coming to realize is that because our focus has been on the creation of culturally appropriate tools. After a decade, we're celebrating our 10-year anniversary of the research group, we're really going to feature and create a website, launch a website that makes these tools available. Free, open, public access with all of our informational internal consistency test retest, and encourage individuals to begin to use these tools so that we really have a revolution in doing culturally appropriate research. And finally, I'm hoping that we can also follow the recommendation and launch a revolution for equal pay for equal work for women. So we have to figure out how to do that as well. I hope all of us can put that on our personal agendas. Thank you very much for this opportunity. Oh, the conference is in March.